you a high performer, obsessed with growth, and looking for an edge? Welcome to Mind Body Peak Performance. Together, we'll discover underground secrets to unlocking the full potential of your mind, body, and spirit. We'll learn from some of the world's leading minds, from ancient wisdom to cutting-edge tools and everything in between. This is your host, Nick Urban. Enjoy the episode. Welcome back to Mind Body Peak Performance. In case you missed it, episode number 18 with Jeff Chilton of Namex was a buyer's guide into what you need to know before purchasing any medicinal mushroom supplements. Today's episode is a continuation on the theme of medicinal mushrooms with our guest, Dr. Mason Brussett. Mason Brussett, ND, studied human movement and then naturopathic medicine at the Boucher Institute of Naturopathic Medicine, BINM. His career has focused on sports medicine, chronic illness, immune disorders, HIV, and mental health. As you'll learn from Mason himself later in the episode, he worked at the esteemed St. Francis Herb Farm, which inspired his deep dive into botanical medicine and herbal medicine. There, he later led research studies and even taught at BINM. While immersed in herbal medicine research, Mason found himself gravitating towards adaptogenic botanicals. He has a general family naturopathic practice in Sarnia, Ontario, called the Health Creation Lab. Mason's patients benefit from medicinal mushrooms, herbal medicine, hydrotherapy, acupuncture, nutrition, and mind-body medicine. Mason leads the Real Mushrooms Practitioners Education Group, where he provides medical doctors with the latest research. So what will you learn in this episode? If last week's episode with Jeff was a buyer's guide, this is a deep dive into specific mushrooms, their active ingredients, and how you can actually use them in your life. We'll briefly talk about botanicals and Mason's experience with adaptogens. We'll cover the benefits and background on each of the major mushrooms and their active ingredients. We discuss how whole food-based supplements work better than individual extracts via the entourage effect. In my personal favorite, if you're listening to this in late 2021, Mason brings us research hot off the press so you can choose the right products for your own individual needs. After buying from them for years, I became a partner of Real Mushrooms. When you go to realmushrooms.com and use your Mind Body Peak Performance discount code, which is URBAN, you get 10% off everything. Now sit back, relax, and enjoy both Real Mushrooms and my conversation with Dr. Mason Brussett. We're joined today on Mind Body Peak Performance with Dr. Mason Brussett, a naturopathic doctor and medical advisor to Real Mushrooms. This is the second episode in the series of Real Mushrooms. Mason, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me, Nick. Yeah, it's gonna be a fun show, I think.
And then the last episode I recorded was with Jeff, and he went through some of the background, how he got into mushrooms, and I'm hoping today in this episode that we can go into more of the specific mushrooms and the use cases and giving people the manual, the how-to guide.
Sounds great.
So let's start off with something light. The question I ask all my guests is what are the non-negotiables, the unusual things that you've done for your health and performance today? I know it's early over there. It's 7:30 a.m. here, so you might not have done anything, but if you have, what have you done?
Oh, that's a good one. So I do this most mornings, but this morning is no different. I did a 20-minute meditation just to sort of calm and get my mind into more of a abiding, kind of flowy, non-thinking state. I drink a lot of water in the morning, and that's pretty much all I did this morning because it's quite early, and I had a good breakfast. And yeah, I usually try to have a little bit of protein with breakfast just because that seems to stabilize my appetite and keep me rolling on a good energy level throughout the lunchtime and afternoon. So those are the things that I did this morning.
Short and simple. I love it. Tell me about your background. How did you get involved in naturopathy and mushrooms?
When I was studying my undergrad, I lived in Northern Ontario and I was doing a lot of hiking and outdoors stuff up there and really just fell in love with self-development too. So started to think about, you know, how I can better myself. What do I see myself doing with my career, with my time while I'm here? And yeah, I linked up with a couple doctors in the north, a chiropractor and a naturopathic doctor, and ultimately worked for them and inevitably led me into naturopathic medicine. And I was really interested in botanical medicine and studying plants, studying phytochemistry, studying drug interactions, studying how to use plants to help people with their health. And while in naturopathic medical school in Vancouver, I was surrounded by some great mycology just in the wild spaces there and got really interested in learning more about them. So it started with plants, and then inevitably when I'm out there kind of learning about plants in the textbook and also foraging and learning about wild plants led me to mushrooms. And a lot of mushrooms and plants are under this class known as adaptogens. And while researching adaptogens, it just sort of led me further down the path of medicinal mushrooms and sort of landed here working for a medicinal mushroom company in Canada and using a lot of plants and mushrooms in my personal practice.
Let's talk about adaptogens, what they are, and what are the criteria for an ingredient for a plant to fall under the adaptogens category, because they've been instrumental in my supplement stack and I take them one form or another, sometimes multiple, virtually, I guess, 5 days a week. So I'm curious what you have to say about them.
Yeah, so the most basic example of an adaptogen is something that helps your body develop some sort of resilience to stress. And a lot of people have different sort of finite examples or definitions of this, but that's the most basic. So we can look at different classes of mushrooms and or families of mushrooms and families of plants that have certain compounds that fit into the definition of that on a more physiological perspective. And then you can also view plants and mushrooms, depending on your worldview, as being adaptogens, even if they don't sort of contain these more specific adaptogenic phyto or fungal molecules. So there's two ways to kind of look at it, but the first is the more well-known, where people are studying different compounds in plants, in mushrooms. And some of these different compounds fall under the classification of saponins or beta-glucans in the medicinal mushroom sense. And then also there's different compounds like in plants like ashwagandha, rhodiola, the ginsengs. And these are what sort of have gotten the most background information on being a true adaptogen.
Mm-hmm. A true adaptogen. Do you know, I think there's three or four characteristics that an ingredient has to pass in order to be considered an adaptogen. Like one of them is it has to harmonize the body or modulate the body, bringing certain systems back into balance, either up if they need to come up or down if they need to come down.
A lot of the things that they need to be classified as an adaptogen would probably be to have some sort of interaction with your, what they call the hypothalamus, pituitary, adrenal, gonadal axis. So those are two brain centers, and then also two more glandular or hormonal centers in your body. So the hypothalamus is sort of the starting point for all hormonal cascades in the body. And that's where your brain sort of starts the process to kickstart hormone production. And hormone production is innately tied in with energy, immune health.
Everything.
Yeah, everything. So a lot of these adaptogens work on that system. And then a lot of them are what are very tonifying. And like you said, they have this sort of modulation capacity, meaning they can either help bring your energy up. So let's just say you have a hard time staying awake in the afternoon. So an adaptogen would be able to sort of harmonize your energy in the afternoon without the reliance on sugar or caffeine or something like that. And then there's the flip side of things saying, well, maybe you have too much cortisol or catecholamines floating around dinner time or after dinner. And a lot of these same adaptogens would actually be able to bring that down. So like you said, there's sort of this innate modulation property that all adaptogens seem to have. And a lot of them can be taken really, really consistently long-term. And I think that's also a definition in my mind of an adaptogen, is something that you can take over a long period without having any serious negative effects or needing to become dependent on it.
Just this year, I discovered I don't know if it's a class of actual adaptogen, I guess it's called the actoprotectants. And they're a type of like synthetic adaptogen, and they've been studied and used in Russia to help their soldiers withstand extreme temperature stress and physical exertion. And of course, it doesn't have the same, it's different than your traditional adaptogen, but I found that the whole idea of having synthetic adaptogens interesting.
Yeah, that's really neat. I haven't heard that term, but yeah, I'm keen to learn more.
When you were getting started on the herb farm, what was it that you were researching and interested in then before you moved on to mushrooms?
I still do some consulting for the herb farm, and the herb farm is called St. Francis Herb Farm. And if anyone hasn't heard of them, they're a great herbal medicine company out of Canada and really good people that run the company. And they have a product called Deep Immune, and Deep Immune is a combination product of reishi, astragalus, and a few other key immune herbs. And I would say learning about that and sort of looking into the research and using it clinically is what got me really interested in sort of clinical adaptogen use, because this formula has been perfected over years and it's used by so many practitioners, whether they're using actual Deep Immune formula or just the combination or the synergy of some of the plants in it. So I would say working for the herb company, working for St. Francis, really allowed me to look into the modulation effects that it had on people clinically and also what other clinicians were saying. And in doing so, also tasting the herbs and seeing how they interacted with my body was very fascinating. So at St. Francis, we used to do these, we call them tincture tastings, and we'd go through all the herbs in different formulas. And it's one thing to know, you know, physiologically, how does a herb work? But when you're making tinctures in clinic, a lot of people haven't even had anything bitter in their life. So it's a real art to sort of harmonize the formula. So it was really fun to go through all the different herbs in Deep Immune and just some other formulas that we were working with and looking at, oh, how does it taste? How does it interact with my body? How do I feel right after I take it? So it was sort of that academic and then that sort of experiential synergy that got me real fascinated with just sort of adaptogens and plants and immersing myself more.
That's cool. I realized the same thing when I took berberine one day, which for those that don't know, it's a glucose disposal agent among many other things, but it helps keep blood sugar stable when you're eating higher glycemic foods. And I took one, I guess it was a little scooper, and quickly tasted the extreme bitterness and realized that, oh, okay, like this bitterness is counteracting the sweet. And a lot of times those tastes are on opposite ends of the spectrum. They balance each other.
Yeah, that's a great example. Yeah, that's funny that you got the big bitter mouthful of the berberine.
Yeah.
Like everybody should experience that.
Oh, I don't know about that. I wouldn't wish that on people. Clinically, do you still use adaptogens? Like, what are the ones that you tend to find yourself using most often?
Yeah, so in the herbal medicine world or the plant world, I use a lot of ginseng. Either there's a couple different forms of ginseng, but I try to stay away from the American as it's a bit more endangered. But the other two ginseng, so Eleuthero and the just sort of the Panax, the Korean ginseng, those are the two that I use. And I use a lot of ashwagandha. I use other adaptogens that other people probably wouldn't say are adaptogens. And then I use a lot of mushrooms, obviously. So I probably use reishi, cordyceps, and chaga and turkey tail the most. So those are the ones that I use in clinic probably on a weekly basis. And then the other ones, depending on the person and the problem. Rhodiola is a really good adaptogen herb, and it's actually really good in menopausal or perimenopausal women. It's very, very good herb. So I use that one a lot. Licorice is a very, very foundational adaptogen that a lot of people skip over, but I also use that very, very frequently. And it's an amazing herb, really good soothing demulcent properties in it. So it's really good for the gut.
Yeah.
And then it's also good for keeping cortisol circulating in a good way. Right. So people that are more pushing themselves and are a bit more depleted, I use I use licorice quite a bit.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
In a previous conversation, we were talking about some of the differences between naturally derived whole food based ingredients and synthetic supplements. Can you elaborate on that?
Just looking at the chemical nature of a supplement, if you put, say, CBD or THC or vitamin C under a microscope and you look at that versus maybe the synthetic cannabinoid that is in the pharmacology line of thinking or ascorbic acid, you see that there's immense differences. And I believe, and this again could be my own biases, but anything that your body has an easier time processing, and we usually find that with things that are more natural in form. So, you know, an orange versus an ascorbic acid supplement or a selenium molecule from a really good Brazil nut. I find that they're better used by the body. And so I just think the less processing, the less tampering, the less messing around we do with things, the better our body's going to sort of recirculate that. But I also understand the clinical value of getting a therapeutic dose in sometimes, and the reality of soil depletion and also needing maybe some of these other things.
Yeah. There's something called the entourage effect, which I'm sure you're familiar with, but it's that things work better together, to simplify it, to pare down the definition. And a lot of times there's other active ingredients and even inactive ingredients in these supplements, these whole food-based supplements, that we don't have ample data on, but we still realize that it's absorbed better, it works better in the system. Sure, there's times when you need higher therapeutic doses, but if you're a layperson who just wants to get the most possible benefits, there's probably something to whole food-based. Like, for example, one good one is turmeric, and curcumin is the extract that's widely used for its anti-inflammatory, amongst many other benefits. But there's also turmerosaccharides, which constitute a smaller portion, and there's a lot of other things as well that we just are discovering. And people, like, I guess in India, they've been using turmeric for a very long time. If they wanted to extract just curcumin, they probably would have found a way.
Yeah, that's a great example. And yeah, there's so many of those just out in the world. Like, if you look at any vitamin C supplement these days, it would have been just vitamin C a few years ago, but now they're sort of adding in all these bioflavonoids and different flavones and things, because they know that innately they work better with some of these other antioxidants in the citrus fruit or wherever you're getting that vitamin C from. So yeah, your example is great, but yeah, there's tons of those exact things out there.
And with vitamin C, they're also adding it into liposomes now to make it more bioavailable.
Yeah, which is pretty cool technology. I love that change is a part of it all. I think it's important.
Yeah. It's cool to see the balance between like the ancestral ancient technologies and the modern technologies.
Definitely.
Let's move on to mushrooms now. Like, where did mushrooms begin? I know where they entered your life, but how long have humans been using mushrooms?
Oh boy. I hope I can do service to this question, but a long time. I was just reading a paper the other day, and from what I know, and I could be wrong, so if any listeners have anything different, please email us or comment us. But traditional Chinese medicine and Chinese culture, it's been dated, specifically, you know, acupuncture and Chinese medicine herbs, and that just sort of way of knowing has been dated around 3,000, 4,000 years. So we know at least that mushrooms have been used for quite some time. And I believe they found some anthroposophical data on Reishi, Ganoderma species, being found with history of human use around 5,000 to 6,000 years ago. So those, I believe, are the first known dates in the East. The pre sort of Christianity or very early Catholicism, they have found mushroom art on walls, brick walls, architecture. And I don't know the exact dates, but I know that they go back quite some time. So, and some people say that they also found mushroom sculptures, mushroom art in the Egypt times. So the times of the pyramid, the times of that sort of whole prehistoric civilization. So
they've been using Europe as well.
Yeah. Yeah. Lots in Europe, pretty much all over. Like I'm sure South America, there's a lot of the Mesoamerican cultures. There's definitely a lot of rich history there too. So, I would just say long, long time.
Long, long time across the entire world.
Yeah.
All right. Let's talk about some of the common active ingredients in mushrooms. It seems from my research that a lot of them have similar components that exert like beneficial biological effects.
The big ones in medicinal mushrooms are going to be the polysaccharides, which get a lot of the spotlight. And the polysaccharides are these long chain sugar molecules that vary in their branching pattern and weight and size. But the most specific one are known as the beta glucans. So that's just a type of polysaccharide. And again, these are complex sugars that sort of inform the immune system. And how they do that is basically they act as sort of a foreign substance. So the body sort of picks up on this fungal or this mycological substance and is like, hey, what's this? And it sort of upregulates or modulates its body based on what the interaction usually in the gut is having. So in our gut, we have about 70% of our immune system by weight, and it's in the gastric associated lymphoid tissue. So that's where a lot of the first effects we think are happening with mushrooms, and they're happening via this constituent, the beta glucans. And they have ranging properties from things like immune modulation to antioxidant activity to just acting as a general fiber for the microbiome. So they're the most well-known compound, I would say. And then you have more of a nutrient profile with the medicinal mushrooms. So you're going to get some trace minerals like magnesium, a little bit of selenium, some copper, and you're also going to get some B vitamins, higher or lower, depending on the strain of mushroom. And then you get into some more unique compounds depending on the mushroom. So we know that lion's mane has some more of these interesting diterpenoids that help with nerve growth factor in these in vitro and animal studies. And we know that some of these compounds may be linked to all the brain or cognitive effects that we think lion's mane has. So it gets very specific with each mushroom. So cordyceps, it has things like adenosine. Turkey tail has a lot of protein polysaccharide components. And then most mushrooms, or some of the gilled mushrooms, have the ability to synthesize vitamin D2 once exposed to UV light. So that's another really interesting compound.
What are the gilled mushrooms?
So the gilled mushrooms are things like your basic like portobello, your shiitake, your oyster, just like those very soft, like ridge-like, I don't know, kind of like feathers, but yeah, they're different from of the gilled. Yeah. And then that's different from more of the polypore mushrooms or more of the tree mushrooms, like say chaga. I mean, that's a sclerotium, not technically a mushroom, but chaga, reishi, birch polypore, those are kind of the opposite, where they're just kind of like a hard chunk versus like a soft, gilly mushroom.
Are those the main categories of mushrooms?
Yeah, those are the two big ones. Definitely there's other ones. There's a lot of weird mushrooms out there. There's so many different species, but those are the most two popular categories, I would say.
Okay. Let's dig into the specifics on different mushrooms. Real Mushrooms has some great resources out there. For those of you that want this detail summarized and nice little educational materials, for cognition, intelligence, mental health, what mushrooms would you look to?
That's a good question. So right off the bat, lion's mane, you know, very, very popular for this sort of thing. And for good reason. It's got a lot of preclinical data, in vitro data around nerve growth factor, different areas of the brain. And it's got actually three to four, or it might be five now, but it's got, let's just say four for sure, clinical studies on helping some sort of, like you mentioned, cognition, mental health, or any kind of anything to do with the brain, really. So lion's mane is definitely the number one mushroom to think of, but not to be used alone in that area. So like I mentioned earlier, lion's mane has these interesting diterpenoid compounds, which I think help it, but I think there's much more going on there and we just haven't discovered it yet. So lion's mane is a great one for anyone looking for any kind of cognitive boost, like you mentioned, looking for any kind of nootropic properties. And it's also really good for any kind of nerve related disorder. So a lot of people use this clinically for things like trigeminal neuralgia, anything to sort of peripheral neuropathy. So they believe that that nerve growth factor from the lion's mane may help with conditions like this. And we know there's a huge gut microbiome connection. So traditionally in China, lion's mane was used for the stomach and the spleen meridians. So we know that there's a connection now between leaky gut and leaky brain, and using mushrooms to sort of modulate the microbiome, I think also has a real big benefit to their cognitive effect. Tremella is also another mushroom that is traditionally used as a yin tonic in Chinese medicine. So yin, for those who don't know, yin and yang are sort of this balance point that we're trying to get the body into. And yin is more of the fluids in your body, for a very, very brief description of that. And it goes so much deeper, but tremella has been used traditionally for skin and all things related to sort of moisture in your body. So skin, hair, nails, also good for the gut. But there is a really good study on tremella too, showing different changes in brain areas, specifically in the hippocampus, that are related to memory. And that was a clinical trial. So I often pair lion's mane with tremella now, and using those two is definitely a must. And then what also comes up in sort of this neurological, mental health, cognitive world is a compound known as ergothionine. And it has preclinical studies now showing that there's lower levels of ergothionine in people who are suffering from different things like cardiovascular disease to sort of old age frailty to neurological disease. So things like Parkinson's, Alzheimer's. And ergothionine is believed to be this adaptive antioxidant that sort of has this interrelationship with glutathione. And ergothionine can be found in a couple key mushroom species.
So supplementing ergothionine can increase glutathione?
I wouldn't go as far to say that, but we know it has a relationship with glutathione. We don't know exactly what that is. So glutathione and ascorbic acid or vitamin C, those are your two big antioxidant systems in the body. And we're not sure what ergothionine does exactly yet, but we know the most percentage of it is in our red blood cells, specifically in the hemoglobin part of the red blood cells. So that's where a lot of oxygen and gas exchange happens. So we assume that there's some sort of oxidative stress process going on there that ergothionine is helping adapt to. So does it help replenish glutathione? Maybe in a very minute way, but we know there's other things like sulfur and a few amino acids and different things like that that may help boost glutathione a bit more. But I'd be interested to see how that sort of evolves with the research.
And how can I use that? I already add lion's mane, some MCT, L-theanine, and a handful of other compounds to my morning coffee and blend it all up. Is that a good one to add?
Which one, the ergothionine or the tremella?
Ergothionine.
Yeah, you can definitely throw that in there. So there'll be trace amounts of ergothionine in your lion's mane. Not as much as say the shiitake or the yellow oyster mushroom, but yeah, if you want to experiment with that, I would be interested in seeing if you notice anything and seeing how that goes.
Sounds like a fun experiment.
Yeah.
How about on the other end of the spectrum for physical performance, for the athletes looking to get an edge? I know that I take cordyceps in my pre-workout, in my homemade pre-workout, and it's one of those few supplements I take and I feel every single time. What are some of the other ones, and what's the background on cordyceps? Why is that?
So the cordyceps mushroom, traditionally the one that was used, the one that sort of takes over the caterpillar, is known as the Cordyceps sinensis. The biggest one on the market and the biggest one that Real Mushrooms has in our lineup is Cordyceps militaris. And the reason why it's sort of been pushed towards the athletic world and optimizing performance is because traditionally that's how it was used. And it was used for anything from sexual health to people with really bad weakness or really bad illness. And they were given cordyceps to help with their energy, help with their stamina. And there's been some studies. There's studies that show that if you're more of a recreational athlete, not really a pro athlete, that taking cordyceps may improve your VO2 max. So this is like a simple treadmill test where you look at oxygen exchange and different physiological parameters. So it's kind of gotten the way of being sort of this stamina mushroom for good reason, because it has a lot of interesting compounds that a lot of the other medicinal mushrooms don't have, like specifically adenosine. And adenosine in the body does a lot of things, and it's sort of like this energetic currency. And the most basic form of energy in our body, known as ATP, adenosine triphosphate, that's basically the little energy molecules that all your little cells use to do any kind of thing, from either a muscle contraction or keeping your heartbeat going. So a very, very important molecule. And cordyceps, along with another molecule known as cordycepin, have been shown to help with that sort of cellular energy process. And this is a little bit of its theory so far, a little bit of its clinical, a little bit of its experience for people using the mushrooms. So knowing that cordyceps have these unique compounds make it definitely something that athletes would want to consider for more of that energetic push or that energetic increase. What athletes, I think, need a little bit more help with, and coming from myself, who's one, is a little bit of help with recovery. So I think that mushrooms can be a real big pusher of active recovery and sort of regenerating the immune system, being that adaptogen that they are. They can really help athletes develop a resilience to stress, because we are stressing our bodies. Athletes stress their bodies more than the average person. So that's why they usually have to take better care of themselves too, because when you're exercising, you're getting a lot of that oxidative stress. And I believe that cordyceps might be quenching, and other mushrooms might be quenching, that oxidative stress as well.
Huh. Didn't realize it had recovery effects as well.
Yeah. And some people may not agree, but what I've seen is that, helping people with adaptogens, specifically the mushrooms, can help people sleep better, can help them recover better from their workouts. And if you get some antioxidants in there, then it can help with sort of that whole oxidative process that exercise stirs up.
And for cordyceps, is it best to take for endurance, only for endurance, or for other sports as well?
Yeah, it's gone, like a lot of bikers like it. A lot of cyclists are really into cordyceps. And those are mostly long distance cyclers. So it's mostly used, I would say, in the market right now for endurance, but there's no reason why it couldn't be used for more anaerobic things like sprinting, weightlifting, bodybuilding. I know some bodybuilders we have a couple bodybuilders that use our products to help. So I guess it's most commonly used for endurance, but doesn't just have to be.
I use it for the anaerobic activities like sprinting and weightlifting as well.
Yeah.
Last time we talked, you mentioned a few others, such as reishi and oyster. How do those fit in to physical performance?
Reishi is a really interesting mushroom in the sense that it's one of the most well-known and well-used mushrooms in the world, and for good reason. So reishi has, again, a lot of these beta-glucans, and it has these other compounds known as triterpenes. And we believe both of these compounds are what make up a lot of the magic in reishi. I'm sure there's many other more in there, but these are the big ones that we're studying right now. Reishi, again, can act sort of as that stabilizer or that adaptogen for athletes, meaning it can help sort of optimize that HPAG access. And it also has some interesting components where it might be able to increase nitric oxide. So this is a molecule that has a lot to do with vasodilation. And it is really also a real big anti-inflammatory mushroom. So again, anytime looking at any kind of oxidative stress, reishi also fits into that picture. And it's very regenerative. It's a very tonifying mushroom. So
what does tonifying mean?
If I had a reishi coffee in the morning versus a regular coffee, I love coffee, don't get me wrong, but the caffeine seems to do weird things to people's blood sugar regulation, their nervous system. They get a lot of anxiety. Tonifying is this sort of property that means you can sort of have it like a food. So you don't see people drinking, well, there are people drinking 16 coffees a day, but we could probably debate the effectiveness of that on their long-term health. But tonifying is just sort of this, it's more of a herbal medicine traditional term that's used to signify anything that's very building and tonifying to your body. So very anabolic in that sort of more moderate sense versus that sort of catabolic sense where you're kind of using energy that you don't really have rather than nourishing your own energy. And things like meditation, stress relief, mindful movement practices, these are also tonifying in more of a lifestyle perspective, but you can also get herbs, mushrooms, and other foods that are tonifying.
I see. So embodying yin.
And also sort of harmonizing yang if you need it. Mm-hmm. But yeah, mostly like yin, more rest is what a lot of us need.
You wouldn't want to use reishi before you work out, would you?
Some people do. But I think that using it more of sort of like consistently over time will give you your results that you're looking for, no matter what time you use it. But I know some people do like it before workouts. I haven't experimented with that, but I know that that is a thing that some people do. But I would say more cordyceps is maybe something you want to do before, or lion's mane, because lion's mane has a lot of those nootropic effects, which might actually increase your mental performance that can trickle into the physical performance. But again, these things aren't really quick acting. A lot of them, even the cordyceps, I would say they're more of this, again, this sort of tonifying thing that, you know, if you wanted an action in your life, you'd sort of want to do it every day, like meditation, eating well, sleeping well. Those are things that you don't just do, you know, before an event or after an event, but they're just sort of these practices. So I would say the consistency is more important than the timing for a lot of these things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Reishi's actually one of them. Listeners, I'm holding up a little Real Mushrooms packet of reishi, and it's one of the ones that I've had for a long time and never used because I've read that it's best to taken at night, and I don't tend to drink a lot of liquid at night. I try and avoid liquid. I like the idea of it, but I haven't got around to actually implementing it.
Yeah, that's great. You got the reishi there. And you got the powder, which is even better because it's really bitter. And I think that's another benefit of reishi is its bitterness. There's a lot of bitter receptors in our body that are really important that don't get activated enough. So there's some bitter molecules in reishi called triterpenes, like I mentioned earlier, and they are really important for health, anything from hormonal health to digestive health. These bitter receptors do a lot in the body.
Let's talk more about that in a minute. But first, one more thing about physical performance. You mentioned that oyster mushrooms can help mitigate overreaching.
Yep. So this is, again, more of a clinical finding. And there is, I think, one or two studies showing that a beta-glucan in oyster mushrooms, it can actually help decrease respiratory infections and recurrent respiratory infections in athletes. So what happens when you are overreaching, which is a sort of, you're just working too hard for the listeners as an athlete, you're not really recovering as well as you should. When you exercise, you actually depend a lot on your sympathetic nervous system. And using heart rate variability is actually a real cool tool to kind of test this in real time. But if you push your sympathetic nervous system, what that means basically is that you're using your catecholamines, so your adrenaline, your noradrenaline, and a little stress hormones like cortisol to sort of help get you through that stress. Because exercise is a good stress. but at high amounts, it's actually a negative stress. So when you're overreaching, you're sort of pushing that system more than it needs to, and you're not balancing out enough with your more rest, digest, heal nervous system. So oyster compounds in oyster mushroom have been shown to sort of help reduce respiratory infections in athletes. And we think that probably why that's happening is because of the increased cortisol and the increased epinephrine and, for better words, adrenaline in the body. And that can do a lot from basically thinning out your mucous membranes in your gut, which can create different problems. It can decrease your immunoglobulins if you're too stressed. So these are just the big things that help us develop resiliency to infections, basically.
Okay. And there's a few others I have here. I have chaga, I have five defenders. Can you go through those and explain why you'd want to take those in the first place?
Yeah. So let's start with chaga. So chaga is a very, very interesting mushroom, or sclerotium, we call it. And it gets a lot of its unique compounds from the birch tree that it grows on in colder climates. So chaga has really sort of open people's eyes to its antioxidant effects. So it has a lot of unique potential in, again, that sort of antioxidant world. So I know I keep saying this, but I like to actually sort of say, like, we have all these redox. So all these reactions going on in the body, and they create free radicals. So chaga is actually a wonderful thing to sort of have, just in the sense of that. I think it's really good in chocolate. It's really good in cacao cream, like something like that. It's really good. So chaga is really good for that. It's also been traditionally used for stomach complaints. So in Siberia, in Russia, and I think even in the Scandinavian countries, there's a little bit of traditional evidence to suggest that it might help with stomach disorders. So this is anything ranging from gastritis to peptic ulcers to any kind of stomach problem. So traditionally, that's how chaga was used. And it was also used as a coffee substitute in Finland. And it, again, is sort of, again, an adaptogen that you can use as a replacement for coffee or a tea. And it has a lot of unique compounds. There hasn't been a lot of human studies done on chaga, unfortunately. There's only been a few non-randomized ones. But what we're seeing in the cell study or the animal studies is that chaga has immense potential for antiviral, antibacterial, and antimicrobial effects. So this is why people use it for immune health. It's often in, you know, soups. It's often in these sort of hot chocolate elixirs, but it's really good for the immune system, what I've seen clinically, but we're still waiting on some clinical data to back that up. But chaga, those are the big ones, I would say. Antioxidant, immune health due to all those antiviral and antibacterial effects, and also just a great substitute.
And if you're curious about the antioxidant power of a compound, can't you look up something called an ORAC score? I'm not sure how it's pronounced.
Yeah, you're right. It's an acronym, and it's the sort of, I forget what it is. It's the oxidative reduction something capacity, I think. But yeah, I've kind of sort of falling out of favor with that whole scale. I think that it's overused and it's not used correctly. And I think some people would agree with me. Some people might not. But, you know, you see it on like all these different like berry supplements and these acai berries and these wild berries. And it's like highest ORAC score ever. And I'm just like, well, didn't that one have it? And now this one's got it. But I think that scale is a bit misused. So I wouldn't put all your sort of eggs in one basket with the ORAC scale, but it can be another marker just showing us that, yeah, there is something going on with chaga that compares to some of these more like superfoods, like these berries, these high pigmented foods. So yeah.
Chaga is also one of the mushrooms you can have before a red light therapy session and get more benefits out of it.
Ooh, this is cool. Yeah. So I actually know nothing about this, but I have been hearing about it, but What do you do? Is it because of the melanin in it? Is it because of the oxidative? Yeah.
Yeah. It's because of the melanin.
Yeah. Interesting. Yeah. That's really cool. I've been hearing about it, but I haven't looked into it. So that's really cool that people are using it for that.
And what are some of the other, like, I guess, ancillary uses for these things? Like chaga is also, I've heard it dubbed one of nature's sunscreens because of is it D2 in it?
Yeah. Melanin and different compounds in there that help basically decrease the oxidative stress from UV radiation. And we know that the less sort of inflamed you are on the inside of your body, probably the less you'll burn on the outside. And that's, I think, where things like chaga, ergothionine, reducing your omega-6 oils might help with getting more tan and less burnt. Mm-hmm. And again, we know that things like green tea and different caffeine or alkaloids in plants can also help with this. So yeah, there's something going on there with skin protection and that whole UV radiation creating damage in the cellular form.
We've now covered most of the mushrooms that I'm aware of that have been studied medicinally, but you guys also have a Five Defenders product, and this has a blend of five of the most, I guess, five synergistic mushrooms. What are some of the mushrooms in that, and why did you guys choose to put those in it?
Yeah, good question. So the Five Defenders is made up of a couple that we've already talked about, like reishi, lion's mane, and reishi, chaga, and then it also has maitake and shiitake. And those last two are very interesting in the sense that, yeah, maybe we'll talk about a bit about those because they're cool. But they also has turkey tail. And turkey tail is actually one of the most studied medicinal mushroom in the world. Specifically, when they break down turkey tail into its molecular compounds known as PSK and PSP. So these were basically like drug-like mushroom compounds that take one active compound out of turkey tail. And they've been used extensively in cancer research in Asia, Japan, Korea, and getting a little bit of headway here in the West, but most of it comes from Asia. So turkey tail, great all-round immune mushroom. And we think it's because of these compounds that have been studied for over 50 years now. And turkey tail, again, has some interesting effects on the microbiome. There's one decent study showing that it might increase more beneficial bacteria. And again, it's just a powerhouse, and it's been combined actually in a few studies with herbs showing that it can increase key immune cells that help fight off infections. So things like CD4, CD8 cells, or the balance between that. And so the rest in there, reishi and chaga, we kind of talked about those, but maitake is a really interesting mushroom. A lot of research in Asia as well on specific compounds. And it is really, again, used for a lot of cancer treatments, specifically these compounds, but it's a very overall beneficial immune herb. So that's why we put that one in there. And shiitake, again, really high in ergothionine, really interesting immune modulation effects. And actually with shiitake, it actually has a lot of anti-inflammatory cytokine effects. So when you're looking at in that from more of a basic immunology perspective, a lot of these mushrooms actually have both anti-inflammatory effects, but the way that they work more molecularly in the body and in the bone marrow is actually through sort of a pro-inflammatory state. So it's sort of hard to wrap your head around that, but it sort of kickstarts the body into sort of acting like there is a stress in the body. So then it has sort of this cascade. And maitake and shiitake are very well known in the culinary world. So they're very approachable mushrooms. They're very adaptable to cook with, and they're very safe. They're very, very safe mushrooms to use. Some people get a sort of an eczema like rash or dermatitis with shiitake, but that's more of the rare side effect of any mushroom, really.
If I walk into the grocery store and pick out a little carton of oyster mushrooms or shiitake or maitake, and I bring it home, I eat it, am I going to get like a therapeutic dose? Like, I know with the extracts, they're standardized, but like, how would I know that I'm getting a therapeutic dose from, I guess, a handful of store-bought mushrooms?
Yeah. So I think if you're healthy and you don't have a lot of chronic disease or any big major health issue, I think even eating like, let's say half a cup of cooked mushrooms a week is going to give you like a decent therapeutic dose. I think if you're, you know, an athlete or you are pushing yourself, you need a little bit more support with your immune system, or you do have a sort of health issue you're looking at, I think probably bumping that up to a few times a week, maybe half a cup to a cup of cooked mushrooms, will give you a pretty good therapeutic benefit. There are some cohort studies on culinary intake of mushrooms, and I believe they're about 3/4 of a cup per week, and they still showed a preventative cancer effect in some subset populations like postmenopausal breast cancer or prostate cancer in men over 60. So not a lot of mushrooms are needed to even get sort of that culinary benefit. So I always recommend my patients, anyone looking to get into the mushrooms, to use the extracts because they're convenient. Everybody loves convenience, and it's nice to just have something on the go, something to sort of mix in very easily. But yeah, mixing them in with your diet is going to probably be the best way to consume them because, again, like we said, it's the less tampered with, it's the less changed structure with them. But again, we do want to change their structure in a way with the hot water extraction because that's how you get some of the benefits. So that's why all of our extracts are hot water or alcohol extracted, because we actually need to break down some of the cell walls in the mushroom. So if you are eating them at the grocery store, just cook them or put them in a stew and you'll get most of the benefits out of them.
We'll talk about the real mushrooms difference and extraction methods in a second. But first, when I first got into mushrooms, I realized that how prominent they are. The molecules are extracted and used in pharmaceuticals and medicine. Do you know what percentage of meds are derived from mushrooms or fungi?
Oh, that's a good question. So there's ones that were originally derived from fungal material or fungal design. So the design of how these things work. Couple examples, and these aren't medicinal mushrooms that we use commonly, but penicillin, that's a fungus. And that has sort of revolutionized the whole antibiotic world in terms of infections and sort of building on other classes of antibiotics. Cyclosporin is also an immunosuppressant drug that was used for quite some time. I think they've kind of moved on a little bit from that, but it's still used. And it was actually first derived from the cordyceps, sort of an asexual species of cordyceps. So that was another sort of drug class that kind of got spun out from that. Another one is Tamiflu, and this is sort of an indirect example, but Tamiflu is a antiviral drug, and it sort of holds a lot of the same actions as some of the compounds in, I believe, reishi. So reishi has these things called, I think they're called neuraminidase inhibitors. So this is how a virus gets into a cell, is usually these enzymes that kind of grant it access. So Tamiflu is not a drug derived from mushrooms, but it has that same neuraminidase effect. And oyster mushrooms, they were traditionally, statins were derived from the same compound in oyster mushrooms, and that compound is known as, it's slipping my mind, but
is that lovastatin?
That's it. Thank you. Yeah. Had the name right in there. I should have known.
But how does the mushroom go from field, from farm, to these little baggies?
Yeah, that's a good question.
You mentioned extraction methods briefly.
Yeah, so we grow them in season. So they grow within the seasons of the weather. And what happens is that once they become a certain age, then we will harvest them. And then they're dried. And then they're put into a powder. Once that powder is, or once we powder them, they're then put into a sort of a big commercial sized vat, if you will. And then they are hot water extracted for many hours. So that means we're using a lot of time and temperature to sort of pull all the compounds out of those powder into the water and sort of extract them. What this does is that in mushroom cell walls, like plants have cellulose. So if you're eating a thing of celery, you're biting through all that cellulose. Mushrooms have chitin, and chitin is the fungal equivalent of cellulose. So it's important to break that down because that can be hard on our digestive system, and it can also be hard on different systems in the body. So that's why we do this hot water extraction. And a lot of these compounds, but a few of them, are water soluble, meaning we can get their benefit by extracting them with water. Some of them aren't, but most of them are. And then we spray dry them, just meaning we just spray that now extracted sort of mixture of the powder and water and spray them, and then they dry, and then they become either in a capsule or, like you said, in your little baggies there.
The heat matters.
The heat is important. Yeah, the heat is where the magic happens. So using that heat, we break down, like I said, the chitin, and you can extract a lot of those polysaccharides. You can extract a lot of the beta glucans, and bringing sort of a more potent extract. So we extract usually like a 1-to-8 or usually in that ratio, sometimes up to 10, meaning there's about just a more extracted compound in the end product versus a real mushroom or a mushroom at the grocery store. It's 90% water. So the benefit of taking a powder is that you're not getting any of that water, because mushrooms, yeah, 9 out of 10 of the component in a mushroom you buy at the grocery store is water. So in that process, we're also taking a lot of that water out of it. So you're not really paying for excessive water in your supplement.
So if you don't like the taste of mushrooms, or maybe you have digestive issues, then perhaps the supplement would make more sense.
Yeah. And the capsules are great for people who have a hard time, you know, doing any kind of powder, but yeah, anybody that wants a different avenue, because a lot of people think the mushrooms are slimy or they don't like the texture either. So it's a great way for those people to get the benefits of mushrooms while not having to, you know, have a mushroom dish.
Earlier, you mentioned that there's a difference between capsules and powders, and you mentioned it in the context of bitterness and having bitter compounds in the mushroom and bitter receptors in your mouth. What are some of the other differences between powders and capsules?
Yeah, so that taste one is a big one, but so just from a compliance standpoint, I think that capsules help people because you don't need to mix them. So I think that they're more easy for people to take.
Yeah.
You can often get a higher dose with the powders without taking a bunch of pills. So a lot of people are already on a ton of supplements that come in pill form. So a benefit of the powder is that you can put it in a smoothie, you can put it in your rice, you can just mix it with water. And a lot of people kind of go both ways. Like, some people don't like more liquids, some people don't like more capsules, but the powders and our bags of powders, they're great for people who kind of have that pill burnout and they don't want to take like a million capsules, even though in just our recommended doses, there's just 2 capsules, but still that's a lot if you're already taking, say, 5 other supplements.
For most of them, I recall that the dose is about a 1/2 teaspoon or 1 gram. When would you want to deviate from that?
So that's a good sort of maintenance dose. Like I said, if you just want to get some of the preventative health maintenance properties of mushrooms, if you are looking to, say, like you said, with the cordyceps, you're actually looking to increase that by about 4-fold to get like a decent effect. So this is where sort of the clinical and more of the retail recommendations sort of divide. So looking at more of like a therapeutic dose, you could go upwards to about 3 grams, sometimes even higher, but depending on the professional using them. But I know some of our practitioners use a really heavy dose of cordyceps also for lower lung infections. So things like pneumonia, bronchitis, anything in the chest or lungs, they will use a really high dose of cordyceps for a few days. And it seems to really just kind of prevent that infection from lingering and going deeper into their alveoli or their lungs. And again, if you have like a stressful week or you're going traveling or you're an athlete, have something coming up, there's no problem with going up with the dose if it fits with your health plan and what your health provider has recommended. And things like lion's mane as well, you know, like these things are very, very benign, very safe. So at the high dose, you're going to get more of a benefit with little to no effect on your health in terms of safety profile.
I like to bring 5 defenders with me when I travel because it's got multiple different synergistic mushrooms and I view it as a mushroom insurance policy.
Yeah, definitely. And there is something to be said about that whole synergy effect of getting the different beta glucans, the different chemicals or the fungal chemicals in each of these mushrooms. So yeah, the 5 defenders is such a a good, well-rounded, synergistic blend that will sort of inform your immune system, not just on one level, but yeah, many levels when you're traveling or not.
Mason, we've been going for a while now. I want to be respectful of your time, but I have a couple more questions for you and then a lightning round. First of all, what are you most interested in, whether mycological or otherwise, and excited about these days?
Oh, what am I excited about? I'm really excited at improving my tennis game right now. I've never been much of a tennis player, but I'm just trying to really submerge myself in the sport. I find it really good for my hand-eye coordination, and I've been playing with my left and right hand. So it's been fun to play around with that. So that's more of like my personal like hobby life. But what am I interested in? I've been learning Mandarin. I just started actually. So that has been really eye-opening. I've never learned a language other than English. So my brain was really tired after my first class. Yeah. And yeah, I'm just interested in learning more about different cultures. And I think to learn more, I think learning the language is definitely a good starting point. So those are kind of two things that I've been doing in my life over here.
That's a big undertaking.
Yeah, I heard it takes like 3 years.
But hopefully with some of the mushroom extracts, it'll be faster.
Yeah, for sure.
Lion's mane. Lion's mane reishi.
Yeah, get them on tap over here. Get a keg.
Where can those that are interested connect with you?
So if you're interested about the mushroom side of things and you want to learn more, you can go to www.realmushrooms.com. And you can see all of the products, all of the education that we do. If you're a health coach, practitioner, nutritionist, any kind of person helping people in the health field, we also have a practitioner program that you can sign up for. And that's sort of what I had at Real Mushrooms, is sort of all the education and research that I like to give to all the practitioners. So if you're interested in mushrooms, I would say check out realmushrooms.com. And check out our blog. We got a lot of good articles. We got a lot of good things just to keep you informed and anything to do with mushrooms. Personally, if you want to see me or connect with me at my clinic and you're in Canada or virtually, you can check me out at www.thehealthcreationlab.com. And that's just my clinic, my primary clinic name here. And those are my two hubs. And again, just social media. So Real Mushrooms is real_mushrooms. And then my clinic is at the Health Creation Lab on Facebook, Instagram.
Perfect. And I am an affiliate of Real Mushrooms. If you guys go to realmushrooms.com and use the promo code URBAN, you can save 10% across the board. I also have their products listed in the MindBody Peak Performance online shop. And again, the links to all of this will be in the show notes.
Great.
Mason, imagine that there's a burning of the books. All knowledge on earth is gone. You get to save 3 most impactful teachers on your life. What would you choose? Who would you choose?
Oh, let's see. I think I have this really good book. It's Plants and Fungi of Ontario. So I think I would keep that, you know, because if they're burning all the books, there's probably some other infrastructures that are going down, and I want to be pretty savvy out there in the wilderness. So that's one I would do. I would probably take a novel from also one of my favorite artists or authors, Richard Wagamese, and he's a Canadian Indigenous author. And which book would I take of his? Probably Medicine Walk. That's a really good book. I think that would keep me really amused. Or Embers is another good one. So one of those I would take for sure. And Martin Prechtel is another author that I really like. So I'd probably just take one of his novels just to keep my heart and soul filled up. And he's a native man from New Mexico who lived in Guatemala for many years. And he has a real rich and deep understanding of just respecting the world and all things related to nature and culture. So those are the 3 that I would bring.
Good choices. Now we'll move on to the rapid fire round. What other modalities, aside from medicinal mushrooms and adaptogens, do you use in your clinic?
So I use a lot of hydrotherapy. So it's a real unique treatment using hot and cold with some alternating electro stimulation devices to help the vagus nerve and different nerves in the spine. So I do that almost daily in the clinic here. And I do a lot of counseling, so a lot of mind-body work as well. So trying to help people regulate their nervous systems and sort of getting them out of a more fight or flight and stressed state, and sort of looking at beliefs that they have about their life. So the herbs, the mushrooms, the mind-body work, the hydrotherapy, those are the big four. And then, yeah, doing a lot of lab testing, a lot of nutritional consulting, and also just general sort of health coaching, I find is a big thing that I do here, is just kind of having or being a mirror or a sounding board for people in their life, whether it's health or finance or relationship related.
What's the best or worst advice you've ever received?
Some of the best advice that I've probably received was very simple, but it's from my mentor, Dr. He, and he told me to slow down.
I've been getting that as a consistent theme recently.
That's a good one, eh?
Yeah. What's one thing that the Real Mushrooms tribe does not know about you?
What do they not know about me? I'm super competitive. We do a lot of virtual meetings and Zooms and Slack communication, but yeah, I'm super competitive. I don't know if they know that about me.
They'll know it once you start pulling out your Mandarin.
Yeah, that's true.
Okay, well, how would you like to conclude our journey together this morning?
I'd just like to say thank you for having me, and I really appreciated you taking the time to interview me and just having a podcast that's expanding knowledge and wisdom for people. I would just say thank you so much, and I really appreciate the time and the opportunity to share more about medicinal mushrooms. I think that there's a subset of population that is kind of curious. A lot of people are kind of scared about mushrooms. A lot of people think mushrooms and they think psychedelics or mind-altering things. So I think that any information that one can have with medicinal mushrooms is time well spent. So I would just say, if you're interested in mushrooms, I would say keep following it, because it's a really unique path. And if you have any questions, please feel free to reach out to me.
Thanks for your support and your time today. It's been a pleasure connecting and getting to know you and following Real Mushrooms.
Yeah, thanks a lot. This is really fun.
All right, I'm Nick Urban with Dr. Mason Brussett from Real Mushrooms, signing out. Have a good week. Thank you for tuning in to this episode. Head over to Apple Music, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts and leave a rating. Every review helps me bring you thought-provoking guests. As always, you can find the show notes for this one at mindbodypeak.com/ and then the number of the episode. There, you can also chat with other peak performers or connect with me directly. The information depicted in this podcast is for information purposes only. Please consult your primary healthcare professional before making any lifestyle changes.